This year, we are thinking about resilience. We are practicing what it means to grow resilience in ourselves and in our community. And when your staff team and I selected this theme, it was a long time ago. We didn't even have any idea that the pandemic would happen and how apt this theme was going to be for us. But we also had no idea that almost every nonprofit and the local school district, banks would start using this word resilience to try to describe what it is that we are all hoping to find right now. It's being used so much that it's hard to remember what it even means. Resilience is strength, but not a brittle strength. It's a flexible, gentle strength. Resilience is the kind of strength that allows us to change, to adapt, to reconsider what we have or what we are able to do. So far, we have explored resilience through the themes of rootedness and then embrace, and now we're focusing on sufficiency as a way to grow resilience. I want to go back to what Allie shared with us last week, her beautiful message on enough. She shared this reading by Lynn Twist. Twist writes, quote, "By sufficiency, I don't mean a quantity of anything. Sufficiency isn't two steps up from poverty or one step down from abundance. It isn't a measure of barely enough or more than enough. Sufficiency isn't an amount at all. It is an experience, a context we generate, a declaration, a knowing that there is enough and that we are enough." End quote. Now, those of you who have been around a little while might recall that I shared in a sermon last year that I got a tattoo about a year or so ago. It's an image of the cosmos. Planets and clouds and gas and stars, and in the midst of all of that, the word enough. Enough is central to my theology, as is my own connection to space and the stars. If what science tells us is true, and we are all created from the same atoms as the stars in the Big Bang, wow. Who am I to say that my body or myself is not enough? I say this phrase, "You are enough," so often in my sermons that I worry it feels a little trite. But several weeks ago, I posted this funny question. It was a meme on Facebook. It asked, "What does your pastor say in sermons?" And none of you who answered that question named this as my overused phrase. So I guess I don't say it nearly enough. So buckle up, friends. You're going to hear it a lot now. You are enough. So here's the problem, though, with being or having enough. We need a deep sense of awareness of this truth in order to be able to live it. And our interactions with the world are often at odds with our knowledge that we are enough. And so we seek stimulation or comfort or validation or joy from external sources, from entertainment or food or shopping Or as Brian talked about in his reflection, from relationships or expectations. One of the lifelong spiritual practices that is needed to experience sufficiency, to really know it in your heart, is the practice of discerning what we need and what we want. What we need and what we want. And there are many challenges that get in the way of us knowing what it is that we truly need and whether it is different from what we want. One challenge is the world's constant messaging that we don't need anything at all. Another is the real challenge that in our world, some of us have a lot, while others have very little. Some of us, due to life circumstances, challenges, poverty, or oppression, simply don't have what we need. And yet another challenge is the marketing and messaging that convinces us that we need things that we don't actually need. This confuses our wants and our needs and often leads to disappointment. So let's take these challenges one at a time. The first is the world's constant messaging that we don't need anything at all. We're okay on our own. We don't need help. Brian talked about this in his reflection, not wanting to be vulnerable, wanting to come across as easy breezy, no needs at all. But of course we have needs. All the time we have needs. Needs for food and water, warmth, protection from the elements, comfort, purpose, meaning, love, health, connection, and more. Of course we have needs. So this is one challenge, overcoming the idea that we need nothing at all, honoring what we need so that we can be honest with ourselves and with those around us. And sometimes this is just really hard when we have been taught that we shouldn't need anything. It's hard to identify, even for ourselves, what it is that we need. I've been working with this on this with my four-year-old, especially when he has what we like to call big feelings. A gigantic tantrum begins. Eventually, we're able to help him calm down, use words, and identify his feelings. But the next step is the hardest. Okay, you're mad. I hear that you're mad. What do you need that might help right now? Learning to turn inward and figure out what might help is a skill that we are rarely taught, especially for those of us who were socialized as boys or men. As Brian mentions, this skill is even less likely because toxic masculinity in our world lies and says that men have no needs. What do you need? Often the answer is simple: food. Hungry, angry is a real thing, right? I know I get it. Or maybe we just need a nap. Or to be left alone for a few minutes. Or maybe we need a hug. Or an apology. Or something else, depending on whatever is going on. Underneath our feelings, there's always a need sitting there, hoping and waiting to be met. So that's our first challenge, acknowledging and learning how to identify our needs in the face of our culture telling us we don't need anything. The next challenge that we face when it comes to cultivating sufficiency and knowing what we need is that even if we are able to name it, we might not be able to get it. In my 4-year-old son's case, he might really need us to fix something that is unable to be repaired. Or he might just need to be an only child. And unfortunately, that ship has sailed. But in other people's cases, sometimes the needs are deeper, and the circumstances of life make meeting those needs not just really hard, but sometimes impossible. It is a heartbreaking truth that our world is unfair. It's unfair. It is set up so that even though there is more than enough to go around, some people have way more than enough, while others cannot meet basic needs. When meeting our needs is such a challenge, it's common to start to ignore them altogether. Why dwell there if nothing can be done about it? And sometimes smaller or more fanciful wants get substituted in the place of needs. Heck, if I can't pay my mortgage and everything is falling apart, maybe I'll just go get my nails done. And that will at least make me feel better for a little while. I have no judgment for someone who is trying to find joy in whatever way is possible, especially when our society has failed in supporting basic needs. This one, this challenge, this is a tricky one. There are no simple strategies to getting needs met when our society's systems have failed. And yet, there are those of us with more stable lives who have enough or more than enough, and we have a responsibility to continue working for a more just, fair disbursement of resources in our society. Our essentials team here at the fellowship provides food for those people who are in our local shelters and supports Habitat for Humanity. Our Justice Action Ministries work with Esther and with other organizing groups in our community to advocate for fair housing laws, better access to transportation, and other local justice issues. If you want to find out how to connect with these efforts, send me a chat in the chat box or an email. Finally, our third challenge, among so many others I know, to knowing our wants and needs is marketing and consumerism. Year round, of course, this is a challenge, but we are about to be inundated with messages about how to provide a meaningful holiday season through all the things that you can purchase. Now, I have to admit that I am struggling with this one right now, especially thanks to the pandemic and how hard everything feels right now. I have recently succumbed to the idea that certain purchases will make me feel better. There's even a term for this. People call it retail therapy, how buying things will bring comfort and joy, even momentarily. Now, I will not make anyone feel bad for loving a pumpkin spice latte or wanting a beautiful Christmas tree. You do whatever you need to do right now, friends. I will not yuck your yum. That's what we call it at our house. Don't yuck my yum. For me, I have become kind of embarrassingly obsessed with scents, smells. I've been buying seasonally scented hand soaps and dish detergent and bathroom sprays for the last several months, summer, fall, and now I just bought some for winter. And let me tell you, I love it. I love it. It's ridiculous. But while washing my dishes is an unavoidable chore, it feels slightly less burdensome to do it with a delicious clove-scented soap in the cool of autumn. I get this little rush of joy from buying these soaps. And I still enjoy them after the rush is gone, but did they make my pandemic daily life any easier? Is anything actually different? No. This is the realization that we need to be honest about when it comes to marketing. It's fine. It's fine to find joy in simple, fun, even silly things. But it's not going to be a lasting, true joy. It won't fix our need for connection, our sadness at the state of the world, or our boredom, worry, or fear. Being clear about what these purchases will and will not provide is key to understanding our needs and our wants. What I need is to see my extended family. What I need is to hold my new baby nephew, to look forward to a trip with my kids. And none of that is possible right now. Do I want lovely soap? Yes. Do I like it? Yes. Do I need it? Absolutely not. Will it make me happy? For a moment, but not truly. Which brings me to our reading that we heard earlier by the Reverend Sean Parker Dennison, entitled In Praise of Marie Kondo. He writes, quote, "I don't think you knew how radical your one small question could be if applied to all things, presidents, protests, and proud boys. Does this spark joy?" Now, if you're unfamiliar with Marie Kondo, she is the author of the book and star of a TV show featuring her strategies for organizing your home. She is a young, petite Japanese woman, and her method is to organize by item. All your clothes at once, all your books at once, rather than by room. She encourages people to keep only what sparks joy and then to discard the rest. Kondo became a pop culture flashpoint a couple years ago for a while, some people adoring her, others loving to hate her. Some folks insisted that she had unrealistic standards for what we should keep or give away. Personally, I love her. Like the reading, I found her question radical. Does this spark joy? It's a question that, like knowing our needs, has been ignored in our culture for so long that we rarely are able to even access the answer. Despite the memes that were floating around social media asserting that Kondo never assigned a certain limit to how many of a certain item you should have. She never said you could only keep 20 books or only 15 outfits. That's not true. She says if it truly sparks joy, or if you really need it, then keep it. If your 500 books, each and every one of them, truly sparks joy, keep them. But if you're keeping it around for some other reason, then don't. She is inspired by Shinto religion, the idea that all things, even inanimate objects, have a spirit. And so she spends some time in each home greeting the spirit of the home and of the objects inside. For her, keeping what we love and not keeping what we don't is about respecting the spirit of our belongings. What a different concept than Western consumerism. Like Dennison says in the reading, quote, "We have all been taught that hoarding will help us feel better, that we will not feel so alone, but closets full of clothes only hide the skeletons, and all these things that I have gathered around me are not the same as company, not the same as hope." He continues, "I've been preparing for the worst, for all the apocalypses I can imagine. I've been saving all of this instead of saving my soul, instead of being here in this moment." This is the spiritual challenge of sufficiency, of knowing what it is that we need, what brings us joy, discerning that, being able to name it and claim it, fighting for the access of all people to have those things that they need, and avoiding what promises to bring joy, but in the end only clutters and disappoints. And this, like the challenge of enough, is what Reverend Jake Morrill encouraged in the other reading that we heard earlier, quote, "What if it wasn't only a choice between misery and Mary? What about a third option," he asks, "an adequate holiday season, one that would have you calm and open, taking it in whatever it is?" In other words, as we look toward Thanksgiving this coming week and the winter holidays following soon after, especially this year, as everything is so very different, what if we strived for enough, allowing our experience to be whatever it is, connecting with those we love online or by phone, celebrating all the ways that we have made it through this year, allowing ourselves a chance to do things differently? I'm not saying it will be easy, but it is what it is. We can't make this reality change, try as we might. So we can instead find sufficiency, as Lynn Twist said, quote, "An experience, a context we generate, a declaration, a knowing that there is enough and that we are enough." As we head into Thanksgiving, it need not be miserable or magical. It could just be enough. May that be so. And amen.